and the time is 6 o'clock.
Streaming at ckuw.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a not-for-profit radio station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on a frequency of 95.9 megahertz on the FM band, with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, room 4CM 11, 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B2E9. You can also call 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Michael Welch, speaking for the Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more great community radio.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe Aking, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota.
Good morning, friends. I'm Ron Robinson.
And I'm Carol McKibben.
We are the Saturday Morning Show, here for you, next 2 hours, 6 till 8. Hope you'll spend some time with us. After that, it's Green Planet Monitor at 8, Mud Puddle Radio at 9. We're here for you 24 hours a day, actually, 7 days a week. You can look it up. 2 minutes after 6, Carol will give us the weather as soon as we've got the weather now. There you go. See that? As promised.
Yep.
So it will be delivered. This half hour, Carol on the roof, looking for ancient radio waves.
Oh, I don't know if I can climb up there.
I've got some aids. Doesn't matter unless you're a cheese advice. Maybe advice from Mary as well. And, of course, dancing and romancing through the 40s. Fringe goes on.
Yes.
Fringe Theater Festival running till July 28th. We've been there. We want you to be there as well. Carol McKibben,
yes.
What will the weather be like to go to the Fringe today?
Well, would you like to know what it's like right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's 20 degrees. The barometric pressure is 101.7 and rising. Humidity, 90%. And the wind, well, it's hardly there at all. Calm. It's going to be sunny today, mix of sun and cloud late in the afternoon, 30% chance of showers, and a risk of a thunderstorm late in the afternoon. It's going to be hazy, possibly a bit of forest fire smoke in the air. High today of 28, humidex of 35. The UV index is, I'm going to say just 7, because you would think with all these conditions it would be higher, but maybe because of the haze, the UV index is 7, but that's still high. So you should maybe have some water with you, stay in the shade when you can if you have to be outside, and don't rush around.
And that includes your dog, okay?
That's right.
Yep. I felt the spirit of Bob Barker suddenly was there with me.
Right.
At 6:04... Well, as promised. Night and Day. That sounds like a great idea, a title for a private investigator's firm, I think. Anyways, it's our Dancing and Romancing, the 1940s.
Of course.
Frank Sinatra with Axel Stordahl and his orchestra. This historic Frank Sinatra performance marks the real beginning of his solo career.
Day, you are the one whether near to me or far, it's no matter, darling, where you are, I think of you. Day and night, night and day. Why is it so that this longing for you follows wherever I go? In the roaring traffic's boom, or in the silence of my lonely room, I think of you. Day and night, night and day, under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me, and its torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and night. And oh, such a hungry yearning burning way down inside of me, and its torment won't ever be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day.
Frank Sinatra, chairman of the board when he had just joined the firm, and he was just the office boy. 1943, apparently, although I see here 1941, but I've got a note here that says he had become so popular singing with Tommy Dorsey, and we've got some of that coming up later, actually. We've got a 2-LP set at the end of the show for that, but he'd become so popular with Tommy Dorsey, the leader allowed him to record 4 titles on his own outside the strict rhythmic setting of a dance band. So he did them in the afternoon of January 19, 1943. As I mentioned, Axel Stordahl conducting. That's the Dorsey arranger, actually. And as it, the notes say, what strikes the listener right away is that the 26-year-old singer, obviously confident, he knew what he wanted, said Harry Meyerson, who supervised the session. Most singers tend to begin with the humble bit. On that first date, he stood his ground and displayed no humility, phony or real. 8 minutes after 6, as we look at age, doesn't matter unless you're a cheese.
Right.
And I crack the book open, and I see with my little eye.
I'm afraid to think.
Clippings that, you know, something to think about, ponder, as we come up to our the most relaxing classical album in the world. Ever. Okay. And that is, there are dreams of love, life, and adventure in all of us. But we are also sadly filled with reasons why we shouldn't try. These reasons seem to protect us, but in truth they imprison us. They hold life at a distance. Life will be over sooner than we think. If we have bikes to ride and people to love, now is the time, says psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Oh, right.
Remember that?
Yes.
On Death and Dying, yes. 9 minutes after 6, then, as we turn, as promised, little Offenbach for you. There you go. Offenbach for you. From the most relaxing classical album in the world, ever, exclamation mark. Belle Nuit, Au Nuit d'Amour. Elizabeth Schwarzkopf with Janine Collard. As I say, Offenbach. From Les Contes de Hoffmann, one of the highlights of that fantasy opera. The barcarolle, gently swaying rhythm, I'll say. Boy, that was recorded quietly, too. The idea is to suggest the movement of a gondola. What's going on that gondola? On the Grand Canal in Venice, where one of the acts is set at 6:14. Carol McKibben will now step up on the chair. Push, push, push. Just above your head, my dear. There, yes. Push, push. A little more. You're looking for ancient radio waves. Go on and on and on and on and on. Forever. Got to be something up there for us, I would think. See what we can find. Come in, ancient radio waves. Looking. There's something there, but it's hard to pick out exactly. I'm getting something now.
Today, we're going to talk about Demeter. She was an earth goddess, a goddess of all things that grow in the ground, in particular, the cereal crops. Demeter had a daughter called Persephone, and Persephone's father was Zeus, the king of the gods. Now, Persephone was very beautiful, and when she was still only a teenager, Hades, who lived in the underworld and was king of all the dead there, fell in love with her. He asked Zeus if he could marry her. "As far as I'm concerned, you can," said Zeus, "but her mother, Demeter, will never agree to Persephone living in the underworld. They don't like to be separated. If you want to marry Persephone, you'll have to kidnap her and make sure that nobody sees you." So that's what Hades did. One day, while Persephone was out in a meadow picking flowers, the earth suddenly opened, and out came Hades driving a chariot pulled by black stallions. He snatched Persephone, drove back into the ground, and the earth closed behind him. It was all over in an instant. When Persephone failed to come home, Demeter was worried. She thought she could hear her daughter crying and calling out to her. She just couldn't figure out where the voice was coming from. For 9 days and 9 nights, Demeter traveled all over the earth searching for her daughter. On the 10th day, she talked to Helios, the sun god, who sees everything from his vantage point in the sky. He told her that Zeus had given permission for Hades to take Persephone and carry her off to the underworld. Demeter was now angry, as well as distraught, but at least she knew that Persephone was safe. But how would she get her back? She didn't approach Zeus right away. She had a different plan. She decided to take a leave of absence from her work. She decided to stop the crops from growing. Without her help, the seed remained covered. There was not a green shoot to be seen. Demeter continued to travel the earth, not searching for her daughter anymore, but in the disguise of an old woman. She came to a place called Eleusis, where Celeus was king, and she sat down to rest by the well there. The king had 4 nearly grown daughters who came to the well to fetch water in their bronze pitchers. The daughters of Celeus greeted the strange old woman warmly and spoke kindly to her. When she said she needed work, they invited her to come to their father's palace to be the nanny or nursemaid to their new baby brother. And she agreed. So they took her home and introduced her to their mother, Metanira, who understood that there was something unusual about the visitor, but she wasn't sure what it was. And so it was that Demeter began to care for the baby Demophoon. Though she still grieved for Persephone, she loved the little boy, and she cared for him as though he were her own child. She nursed him at her breast, and he grew fine and strong on his diet of immortal milk. Demeter did what goddesses used to do with their own children. She rubbed his tiny limbs with ambrosia, and she put him on the fire. This is how a goddess ensures that her child will be immortal and never grow old. Ambrosia imparts beauty and agelessness, while the fire burns away any stray bits of mortality. The queen, Metanira, was astonished at how fast her son was growing and how beautiful he was, and she suspected that something funny was going on. And so one night, she didn't go to bed. She stayed awake and watched what the old nursemaid, who was really the goddess Demeter in disguise, did with her baby. When she saw the goddess nurse her child, she wasn't surprised. That's what nursemaids do. When she saw the goddess massaging some substance into her child's limbs, she wasn't surprised, though she didn't know it was ambrosia. But when she saw the goddess put the baby on the fire, she had to interfere. She ran up to Demeter screaming and began hitting the old woman with her fists. Angrily, Demeter took the child from the flames and threw him on the ground. "You foolish mortal," she yelled. "I would have made your child ageless and deathless. What you have done cannot be remedied. Now he will grow old and die, just like everybody else." And with that, she threw off her disguise and stood before Metanira in all her glory and majesty. Metanira was too stunned to pick up her baby son. His sisters ran into the room and took him in their arms and tried to quieten him. But he cried and cried, because already he missed the goddess who had been his nurse and who had loved him. After this, Demeter was ready to claim her own child back. All the time that she had been wandering the earth and working at the palace in Eleusis, she hadn't been doing her real job, which was ensuring that the crops grow. In fact, people on earth were starving. Some were dying, and those that were still alive were too weak to pray to the gods. The gods didn't like that. They went to Zeus and said, "Unless you return her daughter to her, Demeter will see to it that all mortals starve, and then there will be no one to worship us or offer us sacrifice." So Zeus sent his messenger, Hermes, down to the underworld to appeal to Hades to relinquish his bride. And when Hermes asked him, Hades, surprisingly perhaps, said yes right away and sent Persephone off with Hermes, giving her a pomegranate to eat on the journey. And Persephone, who'd been on a kind of hunger strike all the time she'd been down in the underworld and hadn't eaten a single morsel, ate the pomegranate. Demeter was waiting for her when she arrived back on the earth. She was overjoyed to embrace her daughter again. But when she discovered that Persephone had eaten a pomegranate, she was frightened. "Those who have eaten of the food of the dead," she said, "are bound to the dead forever." Now Zeus didn't want Persephone banished to the underworld forever just because she had eaten a few pomegranate seeds. But what Demeter had said was true. So he came up with a compromise. For one-third of the year, Persephone would live down in the underworld with Hades, and for two-thirds of the year, she would live on earth with her mother and join the immortals for their feasts in heaven. And Demeter was satisfied with this. Suddenly, the trees were laden with fruit, and the crops grew in the fields again. The famine was over. And always, even now, when her daughter is with her on earth, Demeter allows the crops to grow. But when Persephone is away in the underworld, the earth is barren, and so we have winter. Now, it did occur to somebody after this episode that leaving the entire responsibility for the cereal crops in Demeter's hands was not a good idea. So Demeter was persuaded to teach mortals to farm. Actually, she delegated the task to a man called Triptolemus. She lent Triptolemus her carriage drawn by winged dragons, and he travelled the world, teaching the arts of agriculture to all who would listen. Where is Demeter now? Well, we still have winter, so she still goes on strike every time Persephone goes underground. And we still have mothers who aren't too happy when their daughters leave home and think the men they marry aren't good enough for them. The Roman's name for Demeter was Ceres, and so her Roman name is there at the table with you every morning on your cereal box. Demeter certainly had a mean streak. There was one mortal man who was punished severely by her for being greedy, and another that she turned into an owl. But those are stories for another day.
Oh, there we are, a little bit of It's All Greek to Me from Professor Jane Cahill on Ancient Radio, which reminds me, there's a show at the Fringe, of course.
Yes, Corey.
It tells the story of Demeter from a different, from Corey's version, from angle. Corey, of course, being Greek for the word child. Mm. How'd you like to be called child?
Mm-hmm.
Would you call your cat Catty? Well, exactly, as she Kitty. Says. Mm-hmm. And so it's a one-woman show, and it's at the Planetarium. And we saw it, and I'll just say it was very well done. particularly the new take on it, and that was the mother and daughter angle.
Yes.
Llama, llama, llama. And I would recommend, it's air conditioned, but I would recommend get fairly close because she's soft-spoken, and there's a couple of, a little section there where she uses a little slideshow.
That's so, right.
Since we were ushering, we were at the far, at the back.
Yes, it was hard to see.
Yep.
The slideshow.
It's called Kore, K-O-R-E,
yes.
Planetarium.
Yes.
During the Fringe.
Yep.
And that's too bad, but you almost didn't get to see it because the three of us were almost run down on the walk. We saw her in front of us as we were crossing
right.
the street legally. Somebody tried to run us down.
Yes.
So we got to speak to her and say, recommend, maybe if you can turn up the volume a bit. But.
Yes, yeah. So. And because she's telling a story about Greek mythology, you can sit at the front. She's not going to call you out of the audience or anything.
No,
she's
no,
telling
no
a story.
Exactly.
Yeah. So go sit at the front so you can hear.
Right. I've got my program guide with me. So
yes.
I will find the show and then we'll...
it's Venue 9.
We'll give you... Venue 9? Yes.
Yes.
We can tell you when. So I'm looking at today's Winnipeg Free Press because the book pages are... newspaper arrived just before we left. So headline, the big book on the book pages front then is headline, Criminally Charming. And the book is A Gentleman and a Thief, The Daring Jewel Heist of a Jazz Age Rogue by Dean Job, reviewed by Julie Kentner, who says, audacious, daring, and brazen, Arthur Barry, one of the most notorious cat burglars of the Roaring Twenties.
Goodness.
She says, the impeccable Job's impeccable research and captivating writing style takes the reader into the heart of 1920s New York, crafting an intelligent and thoughtful and exciting account of the life and times of one of the United States' most infamous lawbreakers. Right below that, a review of We Were the Bullfighters. I wouldn't have chosen that for a title. We Were the Bullfighters, a novel. Hemingway's Time in Toronto.
Oh.
Unpacked in a new novel is reviewed by Bev Sandell Greenberg. She says, action-packed. Well, you'd hope that, wouldn't you? Action-packed historical tale about Hemingway at a significant but vulnerable transition point. At the same time, is a nuanced portrait of a literary giant that will contribute to the canon of writing about him. Title? How could you forget? We Were the Bullfighters.
Of course.
And finally, I'm looking at the paper chase column from Ben Sigurdsson. Number of Canadian authors have trouble. The number of Canadian authors who have now withdrawn their eligible books from consideration for the Scotiabank Giller Prize is
right.
now tapped, topped 2 dozen. 8 other former Giller winners. The letter titled, To the Giller Foundation, Cut Ties with Genocide. The reference to Gaza. So that includes our Winnipeg's David Bergen. And you want to read the letter, see the complete list of authors, WFP for Winnipeg Free Press, WFP.to/CMA. And I say this is in today's book pages, Winnipeg Free Press. As well, this continuing story, the revelation that Alice Munro kept quiet about the assault by her second husband on Munro's daughter, Andrea Robin Skinner, continues to reverberate through the literary community. Meanwhile, in the recent New York Times feature of the 100 best books of the 21st century to date. What century are we in? 21st.
20,
good. Just checking.
21st.
Yeah. 100 best books. Two of Munro's books made the list. 2004
right.
collection, Runaway, took the number 53 spot, while the 2001 collection, Hateship, Friendship, Courtship,
oh, right.
Loveship, Marriage, landed in the number 23 spot. Say, we may have something to say about marriage in a bit, but I'm looking at a song to go with it. But I'm looking at Mary. Dear Mary,
okay.
Your problems solved is the suggestion here. Of course, Mary always feels that she can solve your problems. So, question from the Spectator magazine for 2007. This week, I went to the opera, and during the intermission, I was invited to share a glass of wine at a private gathering, at which time I was introduced to several people, and I extended my hand in greeting to each. One man took my hand with unexpected enthusiasm and kept me captive in his vice-like grip for what felt like an eternity. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? The pain exacerbated by the large ring I was wearing. The rest of the performance was spoilt nursing my throbbing limb.
I felt more despondent than the dying heroine. It's not the first time this has happened to me, and obviously many other women. So my question is how to reclaim the hand gracefully and promptly, as there are no obvious indicators that you are about to be subjected to such treatment. N.B., Adelaide, Australia. Well, Mary says, if you have a glass in your left hand, pass it wordlessly to someone nearby. Then, as though in a botched attempt to clap him on the back in response to his own warm greeting, use your free hand to tickle the hand crusher's right armpit. As he reflexes, he will immediately loosen his grip. At this point, you can giggle pleasantly. Oh, sorry, did I tickle you?
Oh, Mary, Mary, Mary.
For me,
yes.
I think I'd shout, ow.
That would do the trick in most cases, you would think so, would you? Dear Mary, pages of the Spectator magazine. So I promise you, the play Corey at the Planetarium Auditorium, which is Venue 9, written and performed by Haley Rhoda. So if today is Saturday, and it is.
Yes.
There's a show today at 11 a.m. And then the next one Wednesday at 4:30. So the thing to do, of course, is to buy the program.
Yes.
$10 and doubles as a souvenir as well and covers everything that's going on there. A fair whack of them, of course, around Market Square. The bookman is back.
Right.
Saw him there as well. And the gelati truck was there, too.
Yep.
And Taste of India.
Yes.
Right.
The program includes a map, so how to find all the different venues.
Pretty much everything you need to know, actually, is all there. 6:30 then, term time for the Turner Classic Movie Channel. 11 a.m. this morning, how to succeed in business without really trying. Well, why not buy an apartment block and kick everybody out the next day?
Oh, man.
That didn't go down well, did it?
No.
Total. There must be a word for this, but I'm too polite to say what that word is. It's been reversed, as you know. So that's 11 a.m. this morning, 1967. Hapless window washer becomes head of a corporation, Robert Morse. And Rudy Valley. 4:30 this afternoon, The Sting. Yes. Paul Newman, Robert Redford, Robert Shaw as well. One of my faves.
Excellent, yes.
Right.
Is there something... Have you got a record or a CD?
Well, I guess we'll have to pass on that. All right. 11 p.m. tonight, Red Light, film noir, 1949. George Raft, that's Mr. Gangster to you. Virginia Mayo, Gene Lockhart, again Sunday morning, because it is the Noir Alley movie, Sunday morning at 9. Sunday then, 12:45 a.m., The French Lieutenant's Woman, 1981. Meryl Streep, Jeremy Irons, 1970s movie. 19th century English setting, of course, and we were there, were we not? Where they shot that, the Cobb seems to be in that, the French Lieutenant's Woman.
Yes, in Lyme Regis.
Lyme Regis, that's right, yes. And we peeked over the wall
of course,
the author's home.
Yeah. Fowles lived there in Lyme Regis.
5 a.m., The Red Balloon from 1956. A boy discovers his new balloon has a mind of its own.
Right.
1956. At 7 o'clock tomorrow night, then, Chariots of Fire from 1981. I Won't Run, Don't Ask Me. That's pretty much how it sums it up. Class distinctions, religion, divided UK, never on a Sunday, that sort of thing. Nominated for 7 Academy Awards and won 4. That's Sunday night at 7, then. Chariots of Fire. Well, we didn't get to play what we were hoping to play for. Oh, and I have one other note here, Carol. Let me know what's coming up next. I see the Gimli International Film Festival, July 24th to 28th. 5 days of films and fun in Gimli. So if you haven't already thought about it, get on it now. GimliFilm.com. GimliFilm.com.
Right. Well, I was wondering if you had any Bob Dylan.
We do, and I've left all my notes at home.
Oh.
But I'll say that I think this must have been recorded on this day. And
okay.
Since we can't play, I had... I wonder if we can even use the same CD player. We're going to find out, I guess.
Right.
I wanted to play the Scott Joplin himself.
Oh.
Playing the entertainer, you see.
Him playing his
yes.
own.
It was
yes.
It was a piano roll. So on this day...
Right? Like a Rolling Stone?
And I think you're pretty sure.
Yes.
He was working with the band, don't you know?
Right, yes, yeah. I think he was. Yep. Maybe it's the...
Somebody else has been here before us. Oh, I see, I see. Bob, are you there? And of course he is.
Once upon a time you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you... People call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall, you thought they were all kidding you. You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next meal. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home? Like a complete unknown. Like a rock. But you know you only used to get juiced in it. Nobody's ever taught you how to live out on the street, and now you're gonna have to get used to it. You say you never compromise with a mystery tramp, but now you realize he's not selling. We'll be right back. better take your diamond ring. You better pawn it, babe. You used to be so amused at Napoleon in rags and the language that he used. Go to him now, he calls you, you can't refuse. When you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. Secrets to conceal. How does it feel? Ah, how does it feel to be on your own with no direction home, like a complete unknown?
I'm pretty sure he's working with the band there from something like about 1965. From a 3-CD set called Biograph. Like Blowing in the Wind before, it's a pivotal song. He was just back from the 1965 English tour, captured the film Don't Look Back. Dylan and the band cut this track in a day. His first session specifically set aside to cut a single. And I think it must have been, this must have been the day it was released, is what I was going to say, at 6:40. Carol Kibben, I see you've got, I see the jumble there. Is this a jumble I see before you?
I haven't looked at it yet, but I can try you out on one.
Okay, okay.
Okay. N-U-B-T-L.
Could it be blunt?
Yes, that's what I would guess.
See, I outsmarted myself there. I was trying to add letters and saying that. It's like
watching, sometimes you do try to add letters. And
it's like watching Jeopardy thinking, well, that's too simple. It couldn't be
It couldn't
Bob.
Be this answer. Yeah.
But it was Bob.
Yeah.
All right. At 6:41.
I'm Joan Thomas, author of The Opening Sky, and you're listening to CKUW FM 95.9.
Now, time for comedy. And there's a reason we're playing this comedy.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you about it in just about 6 minutes.
Okay.
Another cup of Maxwell House coffee, George?
Sure. Pour me a cup, Gracie.
You know, Maxwell House is always good to the last drop.
And that drop's good, too. Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With yours truly, Bill Goodwin, the music of Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, our happy postman, Mel Blanc, and Lorene Tuttle, Elliot Lewis, and Wally Mayer. For your Thursday night comedy enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for your everyday coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. It's late afternoon at the Burns's, and a very hungry George is just arriving home for dinner. He hurries up the walk, reaches for the doorknob, when suddenly from inside the house...
Holy smoke! Gracie is being murdered! Gracie, what happened?
Nothing, dear. I'm listening to my favorite radio mystery, The Tall Man.
We got you this time, tall man. You like that? Shut that off.
Well... What's the matter?
Gracie, stop with these radio mysteries. I'd like some dinner. I'm hungry.
But I want to listen to The Tall Man.
Nuts to The Tall Man. How about The Hungry Man?
Oh, I haven't heard that program. When is it on?
I'm The Hungry Man.
Oh.
I'm starved.
Oh.
I'm famished. I could eat a horse.
Oh, well, then you should have called me from the office. I was planning on lamb chops.
Yes.
Look, oh, quiet, dear. I want to finish listening to The Tall Man. You remember it's about that marvelous detective named Rudy and his darling wife, Trudy.
Yes, your darling girl.
Oh, she's just charming. They're so in love. Right in the middle of a murder, they lean over the victim and hold hands.
Yeah, they're romantic.
Oh, yes. It's so exciting tonight. I'll turn it on again. Rudy and Trudy have been captured by the master criminal.
Mm.
He's been chained in a dungeon and he's torturing them.
Well, that I'd like to hear.
Shh. Are you afraid, Trudy?
That's Rudy.
Yes, I guess that is.
Not when I'm with you, Rudy.
That's Trudy.
I know, I know.
I can't bear to look, Rudy. What torture is he using on you?
He's burning the soles of my feet with red-hot iron.
Does it hurt, darling?
I find it rather annoying.
Oh, Rudy's so brave.
I'll call him Spunky after this.
What is he doing now, Rudy?
He's pouring molten lead in my ear.
Does it hurt?
Beg pardon?
Is it frightfully painful?
I'm beginning to get bored. Care for a kiss, sweetheart?
Naturally.
Oh, Rudy's so romantic.
He's a romantic chap, yes.
I think I shall break these chains and capture this ruffian.
Do that, Rudy.
I shall, Trudy.
Oh, Rudy's so strong.
He's a brute, yes.
Stand back, tall man. I got you covered with my Tommy gun.
I'm not impressed. Take that.
Ooh!
How splendid, Rudy. Now, how shall we escape from this dungeon?
Simple, Trudy. I shall take the springs from that bed and build a radio broadcasting station.
Oh, no.
Then we'll radio for assistance.
Oh, Rudy's so brilliant.
Smart as a whip, yes.
You're a most amazing man. Precious.
Thank you. Would you care for a kiss, sweetheart?
Naturally.
Shut that thing off. Shut it off. Shut it off.
Oh, aren't they wonderful, George?
Yeah, they're wonderful, wonderful. Now, how about some food? I'm starved.
Oh, food. The tall man and his wife would never bother with food. They're too busy discovering murders and grilling suspects.
All right. Grill me a suspect. I'll eat that.
Oh, George, why can't you be more like Rudy the tall man? Does he yap at his wife about cooking and things like that? No. He's romantic. When he comes home, he kisses her hand.
All right. Stick your hand up to my mouth.
With your appetite, I wouldn't dare. Well, all right, dear, all right. I'll show you how quickly I can get domestic. Now, how would you like some nice lamb chops, mashed potatoes and gravy, fresh asparagus, green salad and apple pie?
Great.
All right, I'll call the Brown Derby and make a reservation.
You really got domestic there.
Mm.
Oh, brother, I can eat a horse. I'm really hungry.
Hello? Is that you, Dave?
Yeah. What's on your mind?
Oh, Donna, someone else is on the line.
Hey, listen, Dave. Got a little job to do. Got to get rid of a rat.
Oh, it's a couple of killers.
Well, hang up.
Okay. When do we do the job?
How about tonight? We'll collect overtime.
Yeah.
They're going to kill a man tonight.
Oh, stop.
Where is the rat?
360 North Camden Drive. Meet me there in 2 hours.
What if there's no one home?
Oh, yeah. I'll call and check on it.
Okay. What's it gonna be? Poison?
Nah, that's too slow.
I got you, Pete. I'll see you there.
So long.
I heard it. I heard the whole plot to murder a man. Oh, we've got to warn him, George. Where's 360 North Camden Drive?
That's our house.
Good, let's go. Yo, George!
What's the matter?
The killers are after you.
Gracie, you've been listening to too many of these crime programs. You're imagining this.
They're here already. It's the killers.
Oh, it's Bill.
The Killers, that was Hemingway's story. You may remember it was on Turner Classic Movie Channel last week. Burns and Allen then, from way back when, from old-time radio.
They're so good.
1947, actually. Gee, I thought I recognized some of the other voices there as well. Well, Mel Blanc, of course. Sheldon Leonard. Yeah, you can't miss his voice. George Burns began his show business career at the age of 7, didn't make it to the big time till he teamed up with Gracie Allen in 1923. Gracie was originally, of course, supposed to play the straight woman to George's baggy pants comic. But the people loved Gracie the moment they saw her, Burns later wrote. They laughed when she asked the questions. They didn't laugh when I gave the punchline. So I gave her all the jokes. I think he asked her to marry him a number of times. She thought, I'm not sure if this guy's right. But anyways, they did. And the rest is history. Radio.
Maybe she didn't like cigar.
TV. What?
Smell.
Excuse me.
Dick.
Because Burns and Allen Comedy Duo is out the Fringe, of course, and they are very, very good. That's Katie Curtis and Stephen Sim.
Yes.
Tom Henry Warehouse. Venue 6. Loving tribute to vaudeville legend George Burns and Gracie Allen. We've seen them before.
Yes.
And we did bump into somebody who'd seen the new show and liked it very much. Free Press liked it. Al Simmons says, well, the last show.
Yes.
They did a retelling of Who's On First.
Oh, right.
Which Al said was excellent. And so we're going to be ushering there, aren't we, for one of their shows?
Yes, we are.
Yes, all right. So if
Monday
today
or
is
Tuesday,
Saturday,
I think.
And it is Saturday, yes, they've got a show today, tonight at 6:15 at the Tom Henry Warehouse, which, of course, you well, the warehouse, you know, behind the concert hall. And then again on Monday at 8:15, and because I'm looking at my program, which
yes.
I got for $5 because I'm a volunteer.
Yes.
That opening night where we got our T-shirt, both of us wearing our T-shirts.
Well, yes, we are. Plus, you donated. I think I got mine. But you donated
money,
and got a discount on your program.
I guess so. Okay.
Yep.
$6.50 then. And we promised Tommy Dorsey. And in this case, he's Frank Sinatra when he was singing with Tommy Dorsey.
And the Pied Pipers.
That's right, too. And, of course, it's a Ruth Lowe song, and we'll tell you more after that.
Oh, right.
I'll never smile again until I smile at you. What good would it do? For tears would fill my eyes. My heart would realize that smile at you. Will I smile at you?
Tommy Dorsey with Frank Sinatra there from a LP set called This Is Tommy Dorsey, and the reason we played that, well, it was an anniversary of some sort, but luckily inside the LPs I had included a big Globe and Mail article on Ruth Lowe.
Oh, right.
Who gets the responsibility for that song. She slogged away. She was working in accounting at CBC.
Right, in Toronto.
Wanted to be a songwriter, etc. Managed to get a demo that Tommy Dorsey eventually heard. And the boys, well, Dorsey was a star maker. The first time a young Sinatra performed in front of him, he was so nervous he forgot the words of the song he was singing. He was taken with Lowe's composition, but he held on to it for nearly a year. Decided to test it out as a coming-out number for Sinatra. It had gotten over his nerves. So there's a book on this called Sinatra, The Song Is You, A Singer's Art. Sinatra recalls the band rehearsing on the roof of the Astor Hotel when Dorsey asked the pianist to play I'll Never Smile Again. Suddenly, everyone went quiet. Sinatra said there was a kind of feeling of an eeriness that took place, so we all knew this would be a big hit. And it was a lovely song, Sinatra called it. Not only did the song become the first number one track on the very first Billboard sales chart in 1940, remaining there for 12 weeks, it propelled the skinny Italian-American vocalist into the spotlight. I'll say.
Ruth Lowe was handsomely paid for.
I doubt that, and that's why this article in the Globe and Mail says, keep the dream alive. Ruth Lowe wrote some of Sinatra's signature songs, but her son is still fighting to get her recognized in her home and native land. Well, it's ever that was ever the way in Canada. 6:55. Overlooked, underappreciated. Let's have some balalaika music.
Excellent.
Мчат лошадки птицей, ни слезой, ни с тоской молодец не знался, попевал, погулял, вот и догулялся. Надо, Боже, врозь, о, хоть брось! Экая досада, ночью днем об одном тяжко помышляю, все по ней, по моей.
Little balalaika for you there. From a cassette, the Melodia released the Osipov Balalaika Orchestra. Had a variety of conductors on that. And I will give you the English title of that cut in case it comes up later in the day what we were listening to. The Coachman's Song is what it was called.
Oh, right. Okay.
Must have been a charity shop find, I would think, yes. I may have got this in years go by. 6:58. I'm Ron Robinson.
And I'm Carol McKibben.
This is the Saturday Morning Show, here for you for another hour till 8 o'clock.
Hope you're enjoying it.
And so I've got the next half hour.
Thanks to those of you who enjoyed it so much that you donated to the station earlier in the year.
Exactly.
You could donate at any time you like.
Like with you. If you won the lottery last night, I'd be glad to help you out with that. And so we've got some Paul Robeson the next half hour, our march around the breakfast table as well. And I'm looking at the... well, let's do another jumble. If you're sitting there.
Okay.
So just coming up to 7 o'clock.
Yes. O-N-W-O-S.
Swoon.
Yes.
Yeah. That's our help for you today in the jumble, coming up, as I say, to 7 o'clock. Because the Winnipeg Free Press today, of course, now that the Fringe is on, there are reviews all the time. They're using fish, funny-looking fish, to decide. And this is the first time.
Oh, yes, it's very cute.
There's a review here of a show that only got one star. One fish.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Yes, exactly.